Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. We're joined by international law expert Francis A. Boyle for part one of a two-part program on Gaza. Francis A. Boyle is a professor of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law. During the 1990s, he served as legal advisor to the Palestinian delegation to the Middle East peace negotiations. Professor Boyle is author of many books, taking on questions of international law in the U.S. and abroad. You can read an interview from January 28th about his latest book, Tackling America's Toughest Questions, online at ZNet. And we'll link to that at talknationradio.org. Professor Francis A. Boyle, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me on, Dori, and my best to your listening audience.
Now, you've called on the UN to establish an international criminal tribunal for Israel under UN Charter Article 22. Just describe what you're asking for and how it would be set up.
Right. Technically, the proposal is for the United Nations General Assembly to set up this international criminal tribunal for Israel. There are currently two tribunals set up by the Security Council on Yugoslavia and Rwanda. But it is clear that the United States would veto any such tribunal at the Security Council. So I drafted a proposal for the UN General Assembly, where there is no U.S. veto, to set this up as a subsidiary organ under Article 22 of the United Nations Charter. 2.5 weeks ago, then, the Malaysian Parliament had an emergency special session where they endorsed my proposal unanimously and ordered their government to support it, not only at the UN, but bilaterally with every government in the world. So a week and a half ago, the UN General Assembly had a debate under the Uniting for Peace procedure, which I had originally advised the Palestinians on how to invoke. And during the course of that debate, Malaysia and Iran and 5 or 6 Muslim states did support my proposal. It is still under consideration and review there at the UN General Assembly with the support now of several states. Basically, we would just need a majority of the 193 UN member states to set this up. The non-aligned movement has made several statements strongly supportive of the Palestinians. So I guess we'll see what happens.
And what about Barack Obama, who appointed George Mitchell, successful in the Northern Ireland peace talks years ago, as someone who could be an envoy, someone who could possibly get involved in negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians? Is that something that you see as hopeful? What about former President Carter? He's outlined in a new book, The Way Forward to Peace. Now, what do you think about those options? Are they something you see as viable, or do they remind you of, you know, situations from years gone by?
As for Senator Mitchell, certainly he's a lot better than everyone else that had been previously mentioned in the press. That would have been Dennis Ross, Kurzer Miller, Haas, the whole crew of them. They are nothing more than hatchet people and spear carriers for the Israeli government and the Israel lobby here in the United States. If President Obama had appointed any of them, then I think everyone would know that he simply is not serious at all on negotiating peace in the Middle East. At least Senator Mitchell has an open mind and is not a proxy for the Israel government and the Israel lobby. I can't say I'm overly optimistic. If you read the text of President Obama's interview at Al Arabiya TV, which is really run by the Saudis in any event, it's just heavily pro-Israel, adopting their position. As you know, in his campaign, President Obama was heavily supported by Israel lobby sources. Large numbers of the advisors he has around him are Israel lobby people, up to and including Rahm Emanuel, his chief of staff. So I really don't know precisely what Senator Mitchell will be able to accomplish. But again, he's a lot better than the alternatives who, if they had been in there, any of these individuals, Israel lobby people, would have just stalled and delayed any type of prospects for peace for the remainder of the Obama administration, and pretty much given the Israeli government cover to continue to murder Palestinians, steal their land, and basically eliminate them as a group of people, and to prevent them from having a meaningful state. As for President Carter's new book, I've been really busy. I haven't had a chance to read it myself. But the bottom line is, I did serve as legal advisor to the Palestinian delegation to the Middle East peace negotiations from 1991 to 1993, convened by President Bush Sr. and continued by President Clinton. And I also served as legal advisor to the Syrian delegation during the first round of those negotiations held in 1991. And from my perspective, having been involved in this process personally, Israel has never demonstrated one iota of good faith in negotiations with the Palestinians right from the get-go. We could have solved this problem, the negotiations opened in 1991. All this could have been solved no later than 1993. If Israel really did want to negotiate anything in good faith. So, again, I'm not really sure, based on President Obama's interview, that Senator Mitchell has been sent over there to put pressure on Israel to negotiate in good faith. President Obama's statements that, well, he can't really force either side to do the right thing, you know, that's preposterous. We're paying Israel $4 billion a year to wipe out the Palestinians, as we just saw in Gaza. We have all the leverage we need on Israel to force them here into a settlement. But again, it does not, I regret to say, appear that that is what Senator Mitchell's mandate is going to be or is.
Let's turn now to George Mitchell holding a press conference as he discusses the need to strengthen the ceasefire and about to leave for the Middle East.
It is of critical importance that the ceasefire be extended and consolidated, and we support Egypt's continuing efforts in that regard. The United States is committed to vigorously pursuing lasting peace and stability in the region.
Now, there's been talk that the Obama administration might consider meeting with Hamas, but Obama has not been including comments about Hamas in his discussions about any peace talks. He continues to mention Mahmoud Abbas and the Fatah party, not Hamas, in terms of any negotiations. So the big question is, who will be at the negotiating table, right?
Well, that's correct. As you know, Senator Mitchell is going over there, but he's not going to meet with Hamas leaders, who, by the way, were democratically elected. They are the democratically elected government in Palestine, going back to the democratic elections in 2006, which President Bush insisted upon against the advice of President Abbas, the Palestinian president. He was against the elections because I think he knew Fatah might lose them, which they did. So how can Senator Mitchell really engage in a meaningful peace process if he's not going to talk to the democratically elected government of Palestine? And as Hamas has pointed out, well, you know, if the Obama administration is prepared to open up direct and meaningful negotiations with Iran, why can't they at least come here and listen to us and talk to us? So, again, it does not look to me, at least, to be a very auspicious opening here of whatever the Obama initiative is with respect to achieving peace between Israel and Palestine.
Now, does the U.S. have a preferred candidate in Israel's race for prime minister? I mean, we have the front-runner Likud party head Benjamin Netanyahu, Kadima party leader, the foreign minister Tzipi Livni, as well as defense minister Ehud Barak, also the current deputy prime minister, and all of them very militant on Gaza and also playing a lot of politics in the middle of this war.
We may or may not. Basically, it doesn't really make much difference because, for example, at the Middle East peace negotiations. When they opened, Likud was in power in 1991 under then Prime Minister Shamir, an internationally wanted terrorist, by the way. There's an Interpol arrest warrant still out for him for bombings back at the time of the partition of Palestine mandate. But in any event, when the Likud lost the elections to Labor and Rabin came in, they continued the exact same policy that they did towards the Palestinians, which was stall and delay any type of peace process at all. Now, in fairness to Prime Minister Rabin, he did change directions with respect to the Syrian track of negotiation. And Prime Minister Rabin did enter into good faith negotiations with Syria, and there was a peace treaty that was ready to be signed between Israel and Syria, and then Rabin was assassinated. He was murdered by his own people to prevent the conclusion of that peace treaty with Syria. Perhaps Senator Mitchell could conclude a peace treaty with Syria if the Obama administration is prepared to pressure whoever the Israeli government is to go back to the Rabin Treaty. Although Netanyahu has recently said there's no way Israel is going to withdraw from the Golan Heights if and when he becomes prime minister. So I don't know exactly what to say. Certainly Labor was more inclined to withdraw from the Golan Heights, but there was no difference between Labor and Likud, and now the portion of Likud that broke off under Ariel Sharon to form Kadima when it came to the Palestinians. On there's unity across the board, even under Meretz, the former alleged peace party, to crush the Palestinians, steal their land, drive them out of their homes, treat them like dogs, and shoot them down dead like dogs in the street. Right. So I regret to say I don't really see any difference among these Israeli parties when it comes to Palestinians. On Syria, sure, if Israel and the United States really wanted a comprehensive peace treaty with Syria, they could have that very quickly. And the Syrians, having worked with them, I no longer work for them for many years, but you know, they'd be more than happy to sell out the Palestinians if necessary to get the Golan Heights back.
The outgoing George Bush and supporters claim success at keeping America safe after 9/11. But security experts have been expressing concern. What has Israel's Gaza assault done to conditions of U.S. and global security?
Well, first of all, it was the Bush administration that needs to be held to account for what happened on 9/11. It happened on their watch. Everything in the public record indicates that they knew a major terrorist attack was coming on the United States, and they failed and refused to do anything to stop it. And you will note, if you have a look at the 35 articles of impeachment that were introduced in the last session of Congress by Congressman Kucinich against President Bush, he has articles of impeachment in there, I think it was at least two, dealing with 9/11, that they failed and refused to prevent a major terrorist attack on the United States, and then that they proceeded to cover up their dereliction of duties there. So even after 9/11, the Bush policies have produced massive instability in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Israel, Palestine, and Lebanon. We've seen a series of wars. This whole region has now been convulsed in warfare as a direct result of the Bush policies. And as you know, they were threatening to attack Iran. It was a very serious threat, as all the now that has emerged in the public record indicated. They've launched covert operations on Iran. And we will have to see what the Obama administration does with respect to Iran. They have stated that they are prepared to open negotiations with Iran, although I regret to report now yesterday their new U.N. ambassador, Susan Rice, has said that Iran must first stop nuclear enrichment, which is ridiculous. I mean, that's the Bush position with respect to Iran. So I would hope Rice is not speaking for President Obama and that they do open negotiations, direct, meaningful negotiations, good faith negotiations with Iran to solve this nuclear issue. Remember that under the previous president, Khatami, before Ahmadinejad, Iran sent over a démarche to the United States offering to settle all sources of dispute between the United States and Iran, including the nuclear issue, Hezbollah, Hamas, you name it. Everything was on the table. And Cheney prevailed on President Bush to reject this offer made by the Iranian government, and then asked the Swiss government to discipline the Swiss diplomat that sent that offer over here. So clearly the Iranians are prepared to negotiate on all issues across the board, provided the Obama administration is prepared to drop this ridiculous precondition that they stop their nuclear enrichment, which they're perfectly entitled to do under the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty before negotiations open.
Professor Boyle, what about Israel's rationale for the Gaza attacks? I know Ehud Olmert, the prime minister, as well as foreign minister Tzipi Livni, arguing that the attacks were in retaliation for Hamas rockets. How does that hold up in international legal terms, and why wouldn't it work both ways? Why couldn't Hamas use the same rationale, in other words?
The factual matter, this simply isn't true. Indeed, Henry Seigman, who is Jewish and is with the pro-Israel Council for Foreign Relations, just published an essay in the London Review of Books, which you're free to read, entitled Israel's Lies, that they didn't invade Gaza because of Hamas rockets. And in fact, this invasion had been planned probably going back to 2006. And they timed it between the presidential election day and then President Obama's inauguration. So it was long planned, and it had nothing to do with these rockets that, you know, were pretty insignificant in any event. And indeed, Hamas had been observing a ceasefire that was quite effective. So that's all propaganda. But don't believe me, read Henry Seigman's piece in the London Review of Books. As for the legal arguments here, well, Israel was and still is the belligerent occupant of Gaza. It's bound to obey the four Geneva Conventions of 1949 and the Hague Regulations of 1907. Palestinians in Gaza are protected persons within the meaning of the Fourth Geneva Convention. Certainly, they could have used necessary and proportionate force against individuals who were either in the process or getting into the process of shooting rockets into Israel. But that certainly was not what Gaza was all about. We saw mass slaughter and destruction of Gaza, a crime against humanity, defined in the Nuremberg Charter as a wanton destruction of a city, town, or village. And clearly, the whole Gaza Strip was wantonly destroyed. You have approximately 1,400 dead Palestinians. The Palestine Center for Human Rights says that approximately 85% of them were civilian. Even if you read the U.S. news media, they're lying about the Palestinian casualties. They're minimizing the extent of civilian death in Gaza. And if you were watching this on Al Jazeera or on Press TV, which did have correspondents over there and news broadcasts, you could see the wanton devastation for yourself. Artillery shelling inhabited areas, cities, shooting white phosphorus right over Palestinian towns, an overt war crime that has even been condemned by Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, both of which have always historically been vigorously pro-Israel. So, you know, the war crimes are there. And as you point out, even Ban Ki-moon was pretty appalled by their deliberate attacks on UN centers. But Israel has done this before. They've deliberately attacked UN centers, not only in Palestine, but also in Lebanon, at Qana twice. And they do this on purpose to show how ineffective the United Nations really is. It's a paper tiger, and that they're really the only state in the world that can get away with attacking UN centers and nothing happening to them. And again, that is the reason for my proposal B, being put into the UN General Assembly for the UN member states themselves to set up this International Criminal Tribunal for Israel and finally hold them to account, number one, for what they've done in the past to the Palestinians and the Lebanese, and then, number two, to try to deter this from happening again. Because, as you correctly point out, the situation in Gaza is completely unstable. Israel could resume their slaughter of the Palestinians with U.S. weapons, by the way, at any time. And they are also threatening once again to attack Lebanon. You have thousands of Israeli troops right now mobilized on the border with Lebanon. You have Israeli jet fighter bomber aircraft routinely flying over Lebanon as we speak. So there is a realistic possibility once again of a replay of what happened in the summer of 2006, more slaughter in Gaza, and then another attack and more slaughter in Lebanon.
Now, there could be escalations, certainly, where U.S. troops are stationed abroad, but what about pressure that the American people might feel, given all of the other emergencies going on, to just allow the Obama administration and Israel to jointly sweep what happened in Gaza under the rug and put off negotiations until, let's say, the end of the first term, or, you know, if during the first term at all?
Right. The main problem now is that it appears the Obama administration is going to sweep under the rug the criminality of President Bush, Vice President Cheney, Secretary of State Rice, Ashcroft, Gonzalez, and the rest of them for the torture and war crimes that they have already committed. If you follow the hearings with Attorney General designate Eric Holder, it did not appear that he was very enthusiastic about prosecuting Bush and the rest of them for torture and war crimes, despite the fact that the Convention Against Torture, to which the United States government is a party, and the four Geneva Conventions of 1949, to which we are a party, the U.S. War Crimes Act, and the federal anti-torture statute, demand that Bush, Cheney, Rice, Rumsfeld, and the rest of them be prosecuted for torture and war crimes. And it looks right now as if the Obama administration very well might go along with this replay. I noticed the Republicans were saying Holder had to make a commitment that he was not going to prosecute any of the Bush officials for torture and war crimes to be confirmed as Attorney General. Now, this morning, I heard that, well, the Republicans are willing to confirm him. I'd like to know what type of private assurances did Holder give to the Republicans with respect to the prosecution of President Bush and the rest of them for torture and war crimes. From my perspective, this is even more serious than the problems with respect to the Israelis. This involves the very future of the United States of America itself as a republic with a constitution and a rule of law. Are we going to let our own American officials escape any degree of accountability for torture and war crimes and felony? That is, I guess, more concern to me right now. And I would say we need to pressure the Obama administration to appoint a special counsel. Obviously, you know, he personally and Holder can't be spending the next 4 years dealing with all these issues. They have to undo all the terrible damage that the Bush people did to international law, human rights, the U.S. Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, our own Bill of Rights. And I deal with all this in my latest book, Tackling America's Toughest Question, that's now available at Amazon.com. So the best solution is for the Obama administration, Attorney General Holder, assuming he's confirmed, to pick out a special prosecutor, perhaps along the lines of Lawrence Walsh, not Judge Walsh himself, but a Republican with sterling credentials as a prosecutor, and to give them the mandate to investigate and prosecute Bush administration officials, certainly for torture, war crimes, and violations of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, spying on the American people, which are felonies as well. I think those three categories of crimes definitely mandate and warrant investigation and prosecution. And I note that this week in the latest issue of the Nation magazine, former Congressman Elizabeth Holtzman from Brooklyn, who used to be U.S. attorney there, is making the exact same point. We cannot extend immunity to Bush and the rest of them because basically that amounts to impunity, which we've seen all these tin pot dictators down in Latin America try to set up for themselves after all the atrocities they inflicted in the dirty wars down there. So this, I suggest, is our first responsibility as American citizens, to demand that the Obama administration set up a special prosecutor with a mandate at least to look into torture, war crimes, and FISA violations. Of those three, clearly the torture and war crimes, we have an obligation under the Convention Against Torture and the Geneva Convention to prosecute U.S. government officials responsible for torture and war crimes. And as we know from the ABC News expose, that goes directly down from President Bush himself, Vice President Cheney, Rice, Powell, Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, and straight on down the line.
International law professor Francis A. Boyle of the University of Illinois School of Law has advised numerous international bodies, including the Palestinians, as their advisor during the Oslo peace talks. His latest book is Tackling America's Toughest Questions, and his many other texts include Defending Civil Resistance Under International Law, Destroying World Order, U.S. Imperialism in the Middle East Before and After September 11th, Biowarfare and Terrorism, as well as Palestine, Palestinians, and International Law, by Francis Anthony Boyle and Haydar Abdul-Shafi. On the day after this interview was taped, Mideast envoy George Mitchell held another press conference where he discussed his meeting with Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas.
President Obama has expressed the deep concern of the United States about the loss of Palestinian life and the humanitarian needs in Gaza. And I repeated those concerns in behalf of President Obama to President Abbas. It's important to consolidate a sustainable and durable ceasefire, and we encourage continuing efforts in that regard. To be successful in preventing the illicit trafficking of arms into Gaza, there must be a mechanism to allow the flow of legal goods, and that should be with the participation of the Palestinian Authority. President Obama has also underlined our commitment to a better future for all Palestinians whose legitimate aspirations for an independent and viable state should be met. Lasting peace is our objective, and the United States will sustain an active commitment to reaching the goal of two states living side by side in peace, stability, and security.
For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. This program is produced in the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions. Our music is written and performed by Fritz Heed, fritzheed.com.